and welcome back to another episode of This Week on Channel 9. I'm Brian Keller.
I'm Dan Fernandez.
And we've got a lot in store for you today. Visual Studio 2010 Beta 1.
Yeah, lots of features under Visual Studio 2010 Beta 1. A couple lists of top ASP.NET, MVC, and open source projects.
And we might fire up the old jukebox.
Yeah, that's right. So let's get into it. Top story. Stan's Oregon. I had to snip from my blog.
Yeah, this, you know,
personal promotion.
Jason Zander blogged about this. Soma blogged about this.
Blah,
but you had
blah.
It's Dan's blog, which announced Visual Studio 2010.
Cheat me.
So anyway, actually, this is a pretty good roll-up for people that are looking to acquaint themselves with Visual Studio 2010 Beta 1. You got the screenshot of some feature that I'm not even sure exists actually in the product. But
yeah,
you know,
I found it on Office 2010. So top things to know here is links to download, links to your video.
Which we'll talk about.
Yeah, now we only released Visual Studio Team System and Visual Studio Pro, not the full edition. So Team Dev, Team Arc.
We did release the full edition if you consider that to be Team Suite, but we didn't release like the individual role
individual
editions.
Ones. Right. Visual Studio Express isn't there.
Right.
Et cetera, et cetera. And then your installation tips. We do link to Xander's blog for some stuff. Support forums, bug reporting, number of things there.
Everything you need. And so speaking of everything you need, if you visit my 10.4 episode on Channel 9, I basically go through a tutorial showing you exactly how to set up a VM. So there's this great VM that you can go grab actually off of Microsoft.com, which has everything you need for Windows Server. You can mount that in Virtual PC or Hyper-V. And then from there, you can install Team Suite and you can install Team Foundation Server. And I'll walk you through step by step. Now, this is Beta 1. This is the first time we've made installable bits available to the public. And so there are a couple places where if you don't follow the rules exactly, you might hose your installation. So you just have to be really careful here. But I'll take you through everything step by step. It's about a 20-minute video. And from there, you can get up and running and get your own TFS Beta 1 deployment.
Now, is this just for TFS, or is this Team System as well? You show the install.
We install Team Suite and Team Foundation Server.
Now, Team Foundation Server, I set this up at home. A lot of work. Is it easier?
Oh, my God. It's so much easier now.
This Are you serious?
Yes. It's Team Foundation Server.
I don't know if you're being
serious.
I'm
totally serious. Once you get Windows Server and SQL Server down on the box,
SP1 though, right? 2008 SP1.
You don't have to have SP1.
Okay.
Well, it didn't. I didn't have to. Like, I think we recommend it. We'll probably require it for official support.
Okay.
But it's not required. So once you get Windows Server and SQL Server down on the box, TFS setup will take you maybe an hour, and most of that's just copying the bits.
Now, does that box have to have SharePoint on it already installed and the WSS?
Nope, we'll lay that down for you.
Oh,
yeah. In fact, it's easier if you just let Team Foundation Server take care of that for you. So yeah, go through my tutorial. It's super easy.
I guess what you're saying is I have to watch your video now.
Yeah, you pretty much have to watch my video now.
Bam!
Or I'll give you the Hyper-V export.
Yeah, thank
Talk
you.
Talk to me later.
Yes. Are you guys planning on putting a VPC that has everything on it? Or
working on it, yeah. Our priority right now is to get Beta 1 out the door. We haven't announced anything, so I guess you're asking me to announce. We are working on a VPC image.
Bam!
Actually, it'll probably be a Hyper-V image, but a Hyper-V image that we'll make available for download probably in 6 to 8 weeks. There's a lot of sample data and stuff we want to get included in there. And then we've got some
release
criteria.
So it'll have everything already built in there.
Right. Everything will be built in there. We'll have some sample work items, some sample projects, sample branches, things that you can use to kind of kick the tires on the project. But give us a little while because it takes a while for us to spin that stuff up.
Okay. So I'm a noob. Mm-hmm. I know nothing about Visual Studio 2010. You guys released this training kit. What's in it? What's not in it?
Yeah, so go grab this training kit. This is put together by my team. It basically includes a ton of PowerPoints, demos, samples, a lot of stuff that we use day-to-day in our job when we're going out and talking to customers about what's coming in Visual Studio 2010, .NET Framework 4, all these different new language capabilities, framework capabilities, Visual Studio capabilities, and we've just revised this training kit to make it available. So it's one-stop shopping. You download this, and you're going to get a directory full of information. Actually, Greg Duncan blogged about it earlier this week. It gets his thumbs up, seal of approval, and I think it's just something that will continue to evolve and make it easier for you to either deliver training yourself if you're training maybe your coworkers or maybe you're a professional trainer and you want to train people up on this,
sure.
Or you want to go through this self-paced and kind of see everything that's in there. Both those options are available for you.
Cool.
Yeah.
Now, some of the stuff as we go through Visual Studio 2010, we got to talk about the features, right?
Yeah, sure.
This is a big beta one.
And there's no way we're going to get through everything. These are just a few things that you
brought up. Yeah, a couple of our hotness features. Now, I think one of the things, and we've talked about this quite a bit, is just the entire shell, the editor experience, is based on WPF.
That's right.
Now, one of the things for WPF developers is they've actually added designers for RAD data. So people that are familiar with Windows forms were familiar with the data sources view, where I could actually go into a database, maybe it's a view, and actually have a representation of my data as controls. Mm-hmm. So I could, for example, either use a data grid mm-hmm. or actually do it into, I think it was form view, where each of the different elements, so, and it does a smart detection of what my data is. So if it's a text field, it automatically makes it a text box.
Yep.
If it was a picture image, it automatically do a picture, or a byte array, for example. Mm-hmm. So there's a number of smarts built into this, and pre-connection, so combo box would preload with another lookup table, etc.
Yep.
The point is, those things, to make it really easy to build data-driven applications, are now in 2010
now
beta 1.
Now in for WPF.
For WPF.
Nice.
Yes.
I wonder, you remember DataGrid Girl?
Yes.
Yeah, I wonder what she's up to. I haven't checked out her site.
I don't know if she's now GridView Girl or...
Yeah, I don't know. Do you switch?
Yeah, Marcy? Yeah,
we'll know. Yeah, we'll have to check that out.
Yeah.
Well, shout out to DataGrid Girl if you watch the show.
Yeah. Old school.
Yeah.
Reference.
Yeah,
look
going back
you.
To old school references. So another cool feature. So Visual Studio for a while has had the ability to do code snippets for C#, Visual Basic, J# code. Gotta make J-sharp. A J-sharp reference. But now it supports the ability to do code snippets. Well, I don't know if you want to call it code snippets, but HTML snippets and jQuery snippets as well. So, you know, let's say I need a new table, a new CSS template, boom, insert it there.
Yeah, I mean, this is awesome. You could imagine, like, you as a designer or something, somebody building out a bunch of really nice HTML templates, mm-hmm. right? So I'm going to have a two-pane layout. I'm going to have a CSS layout. I want to use things like CSS sprites rather than having to redo them. Those can be built as snippets now.
Right, and then you can share them with your team.
Yeah. The other stuff is the jQuery experience, which is, in addition to snippets, is obviously then IntelliSense. So the IntelliSense
right.
has much deeper understanding of the jQuery libraries.
Right.
So like things like when you're passing in four parameters for something to ease in, ease out, and you want to have like sort of border or timing, whatever, all that stuff is built in it, and you'll get IntelliSense. You'll get description in the metadata, right?
Mm.
So I'll know which parameters that this needs four parameters, for example, and then the details of those parameters.
And here's something that I don't think you knew. The Team System Profiler now supports JavaScript. So you can actually profile your JavaScript.
That is hot.
Yeah, very cool. Caveat, I have not tried this in beta 1, so I don't know if everything's working 100%
yet. Did you just leak something?
No, we've announced this. Yeah.
Sure. Oh, okay.
Oh, you might need to edit this. You heard it here first.
Awkward.
So Mary Jo Foley is going to quote me tomorrow. So Extension Manager, here's another thing that our friend Wes Hutchins is working on.
That's right. So what this is a way to be able to share different parts, different things in Visual Studio. So those include Visual Studio templates.
Mm-hmm.
Wes actually has one on there. Quanto has a post on three templates that actually work in Visual Studio 2010. Wes took the 2005 starter kit, card game starter kit, and actually posted it on there. So
mm-hmm.
the goal is to use the Visual Studio Gallery as the central repository, and directly in the product, you can search for extensions. Now, those may be Visual Studio extensions like Shell Editor, could be new templates, Project Wizards, a template for Facebook development, whatever it happens to be, those things can be listed in the gallery and available directly to you.
That's all. It's like an app store.
Kinda. You could say that. We probably have 30 million app stores at Microsoft.
Yep. But so does this help you actually like turn things on and off as well? Like, let's say I download something, I don't want it anymore. Do I turn it off from here? Is that the idea?
No, I don't know how removal of stuff works. That's
okay.
A great question, because
okay.
it isn't really that intuitive how to delete them in 2008. For example, you actually have to go into where the .zip file is located. Like, there's no right-click selection menu. I don't know if this has, like, say, an installed add-ons.
Okay, well, we'll find
extensions.
Out. We'll find
yeah.
out. We'll go talk to Wes.
Yep.
So, nice. Very cool. Visual Studio extensibility. So here's a post from our friend Terry Clancy, who's on the VSIP team. Actually, he has two posts here. One is talking about all the new extensibility points for Visual Studio Team System, and another is talking about Visual Studio, like just the rest of non-Team System stuff.
Right.
And so, so Visual Studio Team System, for example, I've talked about this on the show before, the testing framework, like the functional testing.
Right.
We have the that's fully extensible. So if partners or end users want to go out and provide extensibility for supporting like plugging into Flash development or plugging into I don't know ActiveX controls or whatever you want to do there, then the framework supports that and there's interfaces. And then you also were looking at some of the shell extensibility of points, right?
Yeah, exactly right. So you know, there's just so much new features in Visual Studio 2010. They're mm-hmm. available for developers to customize. So with a new WPF-based shell, you can do things like hey, and using the new MEF framework, mm-hmm. Manage Extensibility Framework,
yep.
You can drag and drop DLLs to change your Visual Studio experience. Now, obviously, the Extension Manager stuff does that for you automatically.
Right.
But I can drag and drop, you know, a spell checker, for example, for code or for comments,
right.
For example. Now, in the Visual Studio shell itself, the Visual Studio shell allows you to have the Visual Studio experience and actually build your own IDE. And there's two modes. One is the integrated mode, which works with Visual Studio if you already have Visual Studio installed. Another is I want to build a standalone IDE. That's actually what we use for Add-on Studio for World of Warcraft. So some of the stuff that's a real pain is the package load key stuff
mm-hmm.
and registries keys. So all the requirements for registries are gone. The complicated load keys are gone. There's just a number of things that make it a lot easier to actually deploy and extend mm-hmm. because you can actually say file new Visual Studio shell project. So even the tools
right.
in Visual Studio to extend Visual Studio have been greatly improved.
That sounds like another popular IDE that's out there. So seems like we're maybe eclipsing them a little bit.
Oh my God, you are so lame.
Yes, I went there, but no, seriously, they do a great job, and it's cool to see the shell team here taking a lot of the same approaches here to make it really easy to just to build your own Visual Studio add-ins.
Yeah, I think the other part is some of the extensions that I've seen are just beautiful, like the adornments where you get just beautiful glossy buttons on WPF to mm-hmm. do hey quick references for code and stuff like
yeah.
that. Awesome.
So what's this? This is something Yohai blogged about. So Windows 7 API Code Pack. Now,
yes,
this is kind of like an SDK, but they're not calling it an SDK. It comes out of the SDK team. What, like, I guess it's just extra goodness, but they ran out of things to call an SDK.
I don't know why they didn't call it an SDK.
Exactly.
We were talking about this before.
Yeah.
But it is effectively an SDK, a set of managed wrappers.
Mm-hmm.
This is for .NET developers to be able to use Windows 7 features. This is everything from shell extensions to common file dialogs
mm-hmm.
to some of the things you'll see for the shell tree to the new libraries features to everything in between. So this is
right.
a couple of screenshots of some of the samples that actually ship in the API code pack as well.
Gotcha. And as was mentioned at TechEd last week, we covered this on the show last week with Greg and Jeff, they said that Windows 7 is going to ship by the holiday season. So it's right around the corner, time to start thinking about building your apps.
Yeah. Oh, one last thing in case you forget. Sensors and location .NET wrappers are in here as well.
Gotcha.
Yeah, so a lot of goodness.
Cool. So this is a tutorial blog. I forgot who actually wrote this, but it's kind of the three essential things that you need to know if you want to understand Blend. And the first one is animation. Next one is, help me out here.
Well, first one is really the panels.
Right.
Right. So it's like, how do you understand the container controls? Because maybe if you've done native XAML before, you have an understanding of how those work in position because you are setting those positions by default.
Mm-hmm.
Some things to keep in mind when you are using Blend is things like, how do I select if I have nested stack panels?
Right.
How do I select for something that I'm going to drag and drop, or I'm going to right-click at something and actually build a template based on that? It's a little different. In fact, if you just start drawing controls, it by default defaults you to a canvas panel.
Mm.
So you got to make sure to sort of understand the different panels and container controls, how to use them, how to select them, how to change them, et cetera, et cetera.
Gotcha.
And some of the other stuff is that can be confusing to people that are new to, say, doing animations, mm-hmm. is how animations actually work. So within an animation pane, there's effectively a recorder, and you say, you know, I want, you know, the circle to start here and to end here.
Right.
And you drag the time control and say, over 0.5 seconds, it should be here. It'll automatically do the movement from point A to point B. Now, you can do things like easing, which means so it's not like a robot, mm-hmm. same speed. It, mm-hmm. it slows up or slows down. And some of the physics, maybe you want like physics where it's like brushing and it gets faster or whatever. This goes through the details of how stuff like animations work and how specifically the tool side
right.
of those animations work.
Gotcha.
So people looking to learn Blender, I think it's a good thing to look through.
Especially coming from the developer world. I think designers tend to pick this stuff up pretty naturally, but for you and I, anytime I try to sit down in the past and learn something like Blender or Flash, it's just total different world to try and pick that up. So nice to see someone easing us into that. So here's a new book with a few free chapters available for download, and this is The Art of Unit Testing.
Yeah, Roy Osherov.
Right, and
a lot of people know.
I like the kind of throwback to the Art of War here.
But
it's kind of cool because unit testing, you know, it's not really a science per se. It is an art, and I think actually most testing is like an art. You're never done testing, right? You have to take an approach that covers as much ground as possible with as little effort as possible, so that you can catch the bugs that are most important. And so this book kind of takes you through a lot of that experience. It'd be interesting to see if he actually covers PEX in here, because PEX, of course, we're big fans of PEX.
Yeah, PEX is exploratory testing that does automated testing.
Automatically parameterizes your unit test and then feeds data points in there to maximize code coverage and go down all the different paths for your code.
They're trying to put this guy out of business.
They pretty much are, yeah. So it's good that he got this out there before PEX hit V1.
I'm personally excited for this book because there's a lot of stuff where sometimes you're never really sure or don't really feel that great about your unit test, for lack of a better word. It's like, mm-hmm. wow, how many times can I test, you know, two integer math?
And yeah, you're exactly.
Like, wow, there's a lot of ways.
Yeah. So I wonder if does he cover, like, mocking in here? And
yeah, so he covers mock objects and some mm-hmm. of the stuff like, hey, I need to, an example at least for the Adam Studio for World of Warcraft, we have to build a mock object for how the World of Warcraft works, because there's no debugger for World of Warcraft, so we have to pretend like that this event will have, you know, fake that this event happened, and then that will launch your event handler, and then see what happens when your event handler
isn't
launches.
Everything having to do with World of Warcraft fundamentally fake at the end of the day? I hate to break
it
to you.
What?
But
what? Chill out!
Nice. So model view
I
model.
I go blind.
Model view model for dummies. So Greg Duncan, actually, I was talking to him last week at
TechEd, yes.
and he's a huge fan of this. But this is kind of if you're new to model view model like me, this is a series of blog posts that's written for us.
Yes.
Well, for me anyway.
Yeah, exactly right.
Yeah.
So I think this is good. One, it gives you sort of like the basic diagram of how model. You have a view, and then the view model, which you know acts in between. But really, the goes through a simple code sample, because I think sometimes once you look at the code, parts of it are going to be really obvious. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the most important parts is these people sort of like twine on architectural purity and blah blah blah. But once you look into like a basic code example, when you see what's going on,
right.
Which this example has, I think it becomes a lot more digestible for developers when they actually see the code of, hey, all I need to do is structure it like this.
Yeah.
And there you go.
Nice. I can finally send this to my mom. She keeps bugging me to give her a tutorial on MVVM. Mom. So BCL team, Charles did an interview, one of his deep dive videos with the base class library team for the .NET framework, and so they talk about how do you test the BCL, what's in there, but most interestingly, in my opinion, what's new for .NET framework 4.0. So most of the really killer functionality that you use on a day-to-day basis actually is derived from the base class library. So definitely worth checking out this video.
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of those core things. So cool stuff, Charles.
Team City Code Better project list. Now, what's this?
Yeah, so got a couple lists. This is our first one, which is a series of projects that are available open source projects for developers.
Just help me code better. Help me do my job better.
Yeah.
So, these are their top picks then.
Yeah, basically. They're open source projects. This includes things like people are probably familiar with already, like nHibernate, for example. As well as a bunch of other tools like MVC Contrib is in here. I think Windsor projects are in here. Some of the build tools are in here. And then other stuff that, frankly, I wasn't aware of or people may not know about. So, like, one example being Color Code, where it actually does automatic syntax highlighting for code. So if, rather than you re-implementing that library, you can reuse those features and maybe it has a text parser and you give it a grammar or however it works. I haven't actually looked at that project.
Gotcha.
But it's a great place to discover good open source projects.
Okay. Another good list. And here's another list, speaking of lists, 25 best ASP.NET MVC tutorials. So if you want to learn MVC, here are the best ways to do it.
Same exact thing. Yeah. You know, we've talked about Scott Guthrie's Dinner Now, or Nerd Dinner. Sorry, Dinner Now is another dinner.
Nerddinner.com. Yep.
His PDF post, you know, the wall of text with images. That's in here, a bunch of other tutorials, and even things that are probably more atomic, like just one feature, like one that I thought was interesting was the optimizing URL generation in ASP.NET MVC Part 1, where they actually go through the timing on auto-generation of URLs.
Wow, that's
with
hardcore.
ASP.NET MVC. Yeah, and it's only part one of so that finite detail you had to break into a two-parter. So
nice.
Lots of, if you're an MVC developer, definitely check this out, scan, you might find something interesting.
So Jeff Atwood, big fan of MVC with StackOverflow.com.
Yeah, yeah.
Really prominent example of an early MVC website. Picks of the week.
Picks of the week.
So my picks of the week, so I'm a huge security guy. Actually, I'm not, but
I'm very insecure. Oh, God.
Yeah.
Oh, lock the doors.
I'm huge in prison. So, yeah, security development lifecycle. So this is a new process template, basically, but I think it's actually a lot more than a process template.
What's a process template?
Process template is for Team Foundation server, how does my work get done? So when you're a tester, when you find a bug, what do you do with that work item as it flows through the system? How does it bounce around between developer and tester? That's one aspect of process templates. Another aspect of process templates could be the guidance that goes along with that. It could be the way that you actually design and lay out your bug forms or your requirement forms. Well, this is a security development lifecycle. So as the name implies, it's all about helping you build more secure applications, make sure that you go through all these checkpoints along the way to build secure applications. And so Brian Harry has a really nice walkthrough on his blog that talks exactly about the security development lifecycle, what you can expect to find in there. And I had heard about this a few weeks ago. What I did not realize is that they also have static analysis rules that you can use to apply policy to your projects and make sure that it goes through and it scans and make sure that you have, you know, safe or as safe as the tool can detect C++ code, for example. And if you don't meet that policy, then it's going to kick it back and not allow you to actually check that in. So there's a lot of great stuff in addition to the policy.
Super quick question, and maybe we can find out, and I'm putting you on the spot. Mm-hmm. Do you know if those can be used outside of the template? Like you can just load those static analysis rules for the C++ security testing separately?
Yeah.
You
know,
I
haven't tried it, but I'm 99% sure that you can do that. There's no tight dependency to that.
Okay.
I know you will.
I got some stuff that actually needs this.
Okay. Well, absolutely. We'll use it. And so there's a lot of questions actually on Brian's. Wasn't done, man. There was a lot of questions on Brian's blog about how this relates to like the MSF for Agile and MSF for CMMI template.
Yes.
And so those are great questions. He's going to be addressing those in future blog posts.
Mm-hmm.
So
interesting. Yeah. Okay, so on the other side of the spectrum,
yes,
there's how can you electrocute yourself using technology? No, Rudy Grobler, who we've covered before, does some cool WPF stuff. He wrote a confront jukebox.
Mm-hmm.
So first thing is loading memory, showing how to use the Windows Media Player, reference the DLL and the interop assembly. Second stuff is he actually goes through some of the things for binding commands to WPF and some of the WPF command binding stuff.
So what is this actually? Is it an application that runs on Windows?
Yeah, exactly. It's an app, and you probably can't see. There's some UI there, but it actually reuses Tim Sneed's page turner.
Okay.
Code that he had done
from the New York Times, right?
No, it was one of the
oh,
uses
the library,
was that.
The British, the
yeah. So it was a generic, general purpose, I should say, not generic, general purpose page library thing, and he actually does that to turn different albums.
Okay.
Right. So and then the last part is actually adding serial port programming. So people that haven't done serial port programming, he actually walks through hooking up a controller into a parallel port and actually, serial port and actually programming it.
And so for all the kids out there, do you want to explain what a serial port is? It's like a USB port, only you used to have to like avoid collisions with other what are called IRQs on your system, DMA conflicts, all this stuff, right?
What's an IRQ?
Sorry, we're not.
Let's see.
Wikipedia.
Yeah, that's
interrupt
what I
request.
Thought.
You had to have one for each one of your devices.
Interrupt relay request. No, I don't know.
And that's
now
that's,
I'm like IRC.
I know. So that's this week on Channel 9, and we'll see you next week when.
Yeah, Brian.